afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, December 22nd, 2012. I'm Harley Schlanger, and I will be your host. Over the last several days, there's been a series of significant events which may, at some point in the future, be looked back upon as the actions which expose definitively Barack Obama as a treasonous agent of the British Empire. And these events were those that led to his ouster as President of the United States. If you've been organizing with LaRouche PAC and supporting our efforts, none of these developments will be news to you, as they've all been covered extensively by our publications and especially through the work of Mr. LaRouche. In particular, Lyndon LaRouche identified Obama as a narcissistic puppet of the Queen back in April 2009 in a very famous webcast. And more recently, going back to the murder of the former Libyan leader, Muammar Gaddafi, a murder that was organized by Tony Blair and carried out by Obama and forces under his direction. LaRouche warned at that time that the so-called regime change policy would be turned against the nation of Syria, but that the real target is Russia. The lies of those who have organized this series of wars, beginning with that to get rid of Gaddafi and now trying to oust Assad, are blowing up in their face. In Libya, the events in Benghazi on September 11, 2012, exposed Obama's lie that he had al-Qaeda on the run. And you'll probably remember, that was the leading reason he gave for reelecting him, that he had finished off al-Qaeda. Congressional hearings in the last couple of days on Benghazi, while they still leave something to be desired, namely the full truth is not getting out, but they have been directly impacted by the organizing of LaRouche PAC, in particular the distribution of a new updated fact sheet on Obama's alliance with al-Qaeda. Now, also yesterday and available on our website is a press conference given by Congressman Walter Jones, who you've heard before on this program, the Republican from North Carolina, joined yesterday by Charlie Rangel, the congressman from New York City. And what they discussed was why the wars must stop, and in particular, why if Obama does not come before the Congress before launching some further activity toward a strike against Syria, these will be impeachable offenses, and there are now people in Congress possibly ready to move to do that. Now, today, we're going to look into the impeachable offenses, in particular, Obama's alliance with al-Qaeda. This goes back to something that occurred before Obama, namely the original 9/11 in 2001, which was run by an Anglo-Saudi operation that's been covered up first by the Bush administration and now by the Obama administration. But that same network was responsible for the 9/11/2012, which led to the death of an American ambassador, Ambassador Stevens, to Libya, and three other Americans. So joining me today on the program will be William Wirtz, who has done an intense research and investigation into the al-Qaeda connections. And he wrote the fact sheet, which is now in circulation in the Congress, and also throughout the nation. And by the way, it's available on our website. And hopefully, as you listen to this program and the story that Will is going to tell, that you'll feel impelled to download that fact sheet and get it around. So, Will, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Let's begin with your findings. The deaths of four Americans on September 11th of this year have been the subject of a major cover-up, including from the White House, from U.N. Ambassador Susan Rice, and it's continuing. In the hearings before the House and Senate committees yesterday, the U.S. officials continue to say they don't know who did it. Now, in your work, you found that there's ample evidence in their own files, in the public record, that would lead them to a conclusion as to what happened. So why don't we start at the top? What is it that they're still covering up?
Well, one of the funny things is that, of course, there's an unclassified report that was just released And then there's a classified report. And the unclassified report, as you indicated, says that they're still investigating who were the perpetrators of the event. Essentially saying that they don't know. And this is also what William Burns, the Deputy Secretary of State, said before the Congress yesterday. In a certain sense, through the classification of their report, who knows what's in it, but this is very similar to the 28 pages which Bush classified and which Obama promised to release but then continued to classify on the Saudi involvement in the original 9/11. So they're using classification once again to try to keep the American public in the dark, and probably in order to think about it. If any congressman were to ask, who's been briefed on the classified report, were to ask a question which would solicit information which is in the classified report, i.e. you did it, he would be violating national security. Fortunately, the answers are actually already in the public domain.
Well, this is what I found most interesting about your report, that you didn't have access to classified documents, obviously, but you were able to find, this is like the purloined letter, it was sitting on the table.
Exactly. And you just have to have the desire to find the truth in order to see what's clearly before everybody's eyes. The primary sources that I relied on were, one, the documents released from the State Department to the House Oversight Committee in October, which the House Oversight Committee then released to the public. This was 166 pages of what are unclassified documents, including memos from Ambassador Stevens himself, signed by him. The most important one is the one that was released on September 11th, 2012, the day of the attack. And also there was in August a report issued by the Library of Congress's Federal Research Division, which is on Al-Qaeda in Libya, a profile. Now, and if you just follow up all of the leads, you come together with an absolutely conclusive picture. Unfortunately, others have aspects of this, but they don't put the whole picture together. So the information just doesn't allow you to come to the necessary conclusion.
Let me ask you this, yeah, then. Based on the, I assume this fact sheet was given to most members of the Congress, or the LaRouche PAC fact sheet that you wrote has been distributed, right?
Yes, this has been given to every office in the House and the Senate. At the hearing yesterday before the Foreign Affairs Committee in the House and also the Senate, well, in the House, it was given to it, every single congressman who was there.
So presumably every single one of those people could go back to the original documents that you looked at and find the material that's already been produced.
Yes, exactly. So they don't have to violate national security by divulging so-called classified information. They just have to use the public record. In fact, one of the congressmen, Gene Schmidt from Ohio, cited one of the sources that is in the fact sheet, which establishes that the February 17th brigade, upon which the United States relied for security and the mission in Benghazi, is actually Al-Qaeda.
Well, then let's take up this Al-Qaeda question. I assume you discovered that Al-Qaeda really is not on the run, but actually is very much alive in the groups that are either in power or contending for power in Libya today.
Well, the reality of the matter is that the organization which the United States, Britain, Saudi Arabia, Qatar supported to overthrow Gaddafi was the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. This group was formed in the 1990s in Afghanistan, fighting with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. A number of the leaders who are active today and were active in the overthrow of Gaddafi and are active today in Libya followed Osama bin Laden to Sudan. Until he was expelled from Sudan in 1996. This group was approached by the British in 1995 to carry out a coup against Gaddafi, which failed. Many of them were jailed, others fled. But the important thing here is that in 2007, al-Zawahiri, the head of, at that time, I guess he was the second in command of al-Qaeda, announced that the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group had merged with al-Qaeda. And the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group is listed as a terrorist organization in the State Department's designated list of foreign terrorist organizations. You can look at the State Department list in 2008. That's the one that I gained access to. It is also listed in the list of terrorist organizations kept by the UN Security Council. It is also listed as a terrorist organization by the United Kingdom's Home Office. These are the people that we backed, we provided weapons to overthrow Gaddafi, and these are the same people who killed our ambassador. These are the same people who are now who are sending fighters, al-Qaeda fighters, to Syria and providing weapons to them and providing weapons to al-Qaeda in Mali and throughout the Maghreb.
When you mention these are the same people, you have the names of the people, both from the period in the 90s and then the period you just mentioned, 2007, up to the present day. They're the same names, the same people, right?
Yeah, exactly. For instance, the key person who is described as the emir of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group is a person by the name of Abdel Hakim Belhaj. This individual is actually listed in the State Department description of this group as having been connected to the Madrid bombings in 2004. This guy, there's a New York Times article on December 5th, which is, I'm just raising this because it's another thing in the public record that you can easily go to.
Right.
It's called U.S.-approved arms for Libya rebels fell into jihadis' hands. And what it says is that Obama-approved Qatar and the United Arab Emirates sending weapons to the opposition, and that the weapons went directly, what they say, Qataris provided weapons, money, training to various rebel groups in Libya. One militia that received aid was controlled by Adel Hakim Belhaj, then leader of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, which was held by the CIA in 2004, and is now considered a moderate politician in Libya. So now what you have to realize is that, so Obama, and what they did is they disguised the weapons. They were, Qataris were told to send not U.S. weapons because they could be traced, but to send other weapons, including French and Russian designed weapons. At any rate, the point is Belhaj led the, this was the opposition in Libya. It was al-Qaeda.
Right.
And he, after they took over Tripoli, he was appointed to be the commander of the Tripoli Military Council, and
so
he was given.
Let's highlight that point. A top Al Qaeda operative who would be known to people in these counterterror groups in the United States and other parts of the world was named to the government in Tripoli after the fall of Gaddafi.
Exactly, he was head of the Tripoli Military Council, given responsibility for providing, among other things, security for all foreign embassies, including the U.S. embassy. He was appointed to this position in August 2011. He stepped down in May 2012 to participate in the elections there. But what I would also stress is this. Press reports indicate that he was in Benghazi in the spring of 2011 and helped organize the February 17th Brigade, which was providing security for the U.S. Embassy in Benghazi. And if you look at the Accountability Review Board report, what they stress is that the February 17th Brigade, one, they were on a strike for higher wages, so they weren't escorting U.S. mission vehicles as they were supposed to.
Al-Qaeda forces were on strike for higher wages.
That's right.
Okay.
They were the only armed guards inside the mission. And when the attack occurred, they ran. And the accountability review board says that their loyalties were suspect, and that there is no evidence that they called the barracks of the February 17th Brigade, which was only 2 kilometers away, in order to come in and help the mission against the attack. In fact, only a few of the February 17th Brigade forces from the barracks arrived an hour afterwards, after the attack had been concluded. So it's clear that the this grouping, the February 17th Brigade, was in on the attack in the sense of not actually providing protection for the embassy, for the mission, but actually running and not coming to the defense of the mission. So that's one of the groups, and this is, you know, then what you have to do is look at the group that took credit the next day for the attack, Ansar al-Sharia.
Let's get to that in a second. I just want to go back and pick up a couple of other things. But to let our audience know, you're listening to Will Wirtz from the Executive Intelligence Review and a longtime associate of Lyndon LaRouche. And Will is the person who pulled together the investigation and research that went into the updated fact sheet on the alliance between U.S. President Barack Obama and the al-Qaeda terrorists. Now, Will, I want to just backtrack on a couple of points before we go ahead and pick up the Benghazi side of this. It would be known to Obama, presumably. You mentioned the New York Times article, the fact that they were working through Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Obama presumably knows that the classified portion of the 9/11 report done by the Senate mentioned that the Saudis were part of the original 9/11 terrorism, right?
Right.
And he presumably would know that the Saudis have an alliance, a longtime alliance, with al-Qaeda, given the bin Laden connection and the role the Saudis played going back to the older Bush in the 1980s and the original creation of this operation. So it's not as though they could say, well, we didn't know what the Saudis were up to.
No, Obama, as Lyndon LaRouche has pointed out, you just have to look at Obama's own personal history, which is really this radical, in his upbringing in Indonesia, the background of his father. He comes from a radical Muslim background. And of course, there's the story, which is, certainly credible, that even his education at Harvard was funded through a Saudi educational fund.
And we can get into the role of Tony Blair in just a moment,
right,
because that's the other part of the Anglo-Saudi connection.
Well, the obvious point here is, what you have to realize is that the Libyan Islamic fighting group, they were, including this guy, Belhaj, and several other, and most of the opposition, they ended up being jailed in Tripoli in the Abu Salim prison.
By Gaddafi.
And remember, look at the pattern here. 1995, it's MI6, the British, that urge the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group to carry out a coup against Gaddafi. It fails. Some of them are jailed, others flee, including Belhaj. Belhaj was picked up by the British and the CIA in 2004 and rendered to Libya and jailed there. This is after Tony Blair had arranged the Gaddafi opening to the West.
Right.
Okay. Then what happens is 2007, it's announced that the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group has merged officially with al-Qaeda. And one of the things you have to realize is that there are Libyans who have been at the top echelon of the al-Qaeda leadership in Pakistan. all along.
This comes out of the recruitment grounds right near Benghazi and Derna, right?
Yeah. See, the Library of Congress put out a report which basically said that per capita, Libyans accounted for more Al Qaeda fighters in Iraq against U.S. forces and in Afghanistan than any other country, and that the Al Qaeda fighters from Libya came predominantly from Benghazi in a nearby town called Derna. Derna accounts for 60% of the recruits, Benghazi for 23%. So what you're talking about is the cradle of Al Qaeda forces fighting U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. These are the people that we allied with. In 2010, undoubtedly under the impetus of Tony Blair, Saif Gaddafi arranged a reconciliation with these Al Qaeda operatives and released Belhaj and 233 other Libyan Islamic Fighting Group members from this Abu Salim prison. In less than a year, they became the opposition, the armed opposition, armed by, you know, by Obama, armed by Blair, Saudi Arabia, and so forth, to Gaddafi. And now they effectively, there's a sort of a power struggle going on in Libya, but we are using them in respect to Syria to overthrow Assad. And this guy, Belhaj, for instance, in November 2011, Belhaj, as commander of the Tripoli Military Council, went to Turkey to meet with the Syrian Free Army to offer them training, to offer them manpower, to offer them weapons. And his deputy, the deputy head of the Tripoli Military Council, quit the Tripoli Military Council at that point and went to Syria with 20 other top leaders of the Tripoli Military Council, and now runs a 6,000-person group in Syria, 10% of whom are Libyans. So and so what you have is this guy we backed to overthrow Gaddafi is actually organizing the Al-Qaeda operation in Syria against Assad for Obama.
And this is the group, the Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria?
Well, no, it's actually called UMA. But that's the whole point. If you have one group called al-Nusra, so what? You can outlaw a group called al-Nusra, but as you know, there were 100 demonstrations in Syria the Friday after that designation, in which all of the groups there said, we are all al-Nusra, and even the head of the new coalition that we're backing said that the designation should be reexamined. The point is that there are numerous al-Qaeda groups, not just one,
right,
which is the way it works in Libya. There are numerous militias. They're all al-Qaeda. In fact, the way that al-Qaeda's strategy is not to operate under its own name. It's called the clandestine al-Qaeda because they obviously, they're afraid to get targeted. So they don't operate under their own name. So that's why when you look at the Benghazi attack, the February 17th Brigade was al-Qaeda. The Ansar al-Sharia group is al-Qaeda. The Libya Shield is al-Qaeda. All of them. So the group that claim responsibility for the attack is al-Qaeda. That's Ansar al-Sharia. The group that's supposed to be defending us, February 17th Brigade, is al-Qaeda. And the group that met us at the reinforcements that came from Tripoli and then went to the annex, met us at the airport, that's Libya Shield. They're al-Qaeda. In fact, the head of that group, according to the Library of Congress report, is widely believed to be the head of al-Qaeda in Libya. So
that,
we were surrounded.
Kumu or something like that?
Huh?
Is that this guy Kumu?
No, Kumu is head of the Ansar al-Sharia group that took responsibility for the attack. He was in Guantanamo for over 5 years. He was a driver in Sudan for Osama bin Laden, having fought in Afghanistan before that. This guy, he's Al Qaeda. If you read, he, in fact, the Guantanamo detainee assessment of him says that they found on the laptop of one of the financiers of the original 9/11 2001 that he was receiving a monthly stipend from this guy who financed the original 9/11. So that's Bin Kumu. But the guy who's rumored to be the head of Al-Qaeda in Libya is this is the guy whose name is Wasim bin Hamid. Mm-hmm. And he runs Libya Shield. Now the Accountability Review Board report only refers does not name that group, only refers to them as a quasi-governmental militia. And it covers up entirely the role they played, which is that they met the reinforcements from Tripoli at the airport, delayed them, and then followed them in 10 to 15 vehicles to the CIA annex, and the firing on the annex began 15 minutes after they arrived. So the report basically praises this group for helping us to evacuate our forces afterwards. But they're okay.
Well, let me ask you one of the other questions. I want to get into what the Congress is doing, what we're doing to move the Congress, and a few other questions of that sort. But let me come back to a point that I think is also something that's not been reported on, which is some of these memos and letters sent from Ambassador Stevens himself. How aware was he that he was dealing directly with Al-Qaeda in the Benghazi situation?
Well, I think he well, we can't answer that question fully, but the point is that he was obviously the U.S. Emissary in Benghazi during the overthrow of Gaddafi. So clearly he had some knowledge of who he was dealing with. Now, one of the things that comes out in the there was a memo which was sent on September 11, 2012, from the embassy, which is under his name, signed by him, which, among other things, reports that there was a... Just to give you the context of this thing, one of the things that's reported is that there was a meeting on September 9 with this Wasim bin Hamid of the Libyan Shield. Again, the person reported to be possibly the head of Al-Qaeda in Libya. It was before Stevens arrived. And what they basically said is that they were backing the Muslim Brotherhood candidate for prime minister, a guy named Barassi, who was from Benghazi. And the U.S. government was backing Jibril. And they said that if Barassi, the Muslim Brotherhood candidate, were to win, then members of the Libyan Shield and the February 17th Brigade would get plum positions in the Defense Department. In fact, the commander of February 17th would probably be named Minister of Defense in Libya. He said if the United States didn't stop, if Barassi, the Muslim Brotherhood candidate, were not elected, and if Jibril were not defeated, that they could no longer provide security, which they currently do, to the mission in Benghazi. So it's a threat. Now, what you have to understand is that the process for selecting the prime minister of Libya by the General National Assembly, which had just been elected, began September 10 and concluded September 12. So this was an immediate issue. And the United States was not backing Barassi. So this is one of the factors in this overall situation that, you know, has to actually be looked at. I think Stevens had to know that we were backing the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group in overthrowing Gaddafi. There is a report which I saw in a Saudi paper that Stevens Belhaj wanted to get the portfolio as Minister of Defense or Minister of Interior, and he was denied it. And this one report from Saudi Arabia said that Stevens had opposed Belhaj getting that position. So it is we don't know. I don't know what Stevens was doing in Benghazi, what the mission in Benghazi was actually doing, We know that he had a meeting with a Turkish diplomat before the attack. We know that also that there was there were UK United Kingdom diplomats in Benghazi on September 5th, and that there seemed to have been some there on September 11th as well. We don't know. We know that there are shipments of weapons that came from Benghazi to Turkey on September 6th for the Syrian opposition. So we don't know whether he was opposing certain of the al-Qaeda elements at that point, and that was a factor. But, you know, we just don't know at that point. But he could not have been unaware,
right,
of this al-Qaeda factor.
Well, what we do know is in our updated fact sheet, which is available on the LaRouche PAC website. Now, Will, you, I'm sure, read very carefully the open testimony yesterday with Burns and I can't remember the name of the other person.
Nides,
yeah. But it appears as though, you mentioned Gene Congressman Schmidt, it appears as though other congressmen were a little more bold. Brad Sherman from California, some of the Republicans, a little more bold than they've been previously. But still, this question of al-Qaeda, how much did that come up in the hearing yesterday?
Well, let me put it this way. I mean, we saturated Congress with this. The day before Wednesday, and then also on Thursday, we got this into hands of, I think about 80% of the people in that hearing had copies of the fact sheet in their hands. We have met with staff members of many congressmen even prior to yesterday's hearings and so forth. I think there was, the congressman didn't go far enough, but there were really, for the first time, questions raised that went beyond the cover-up of this accountability review board. And address the policy issues, that's what's actually involved. The report itself does not even mention the White House. And what came up in the hearing is that the Accountability Review Board never interviewed Obama or Biden. In fact, they never interviewed the Secretary of State, which is really quite incredible for an accountability board, which is for the State Department. They never interviewed Hillary Clinton. The Obama question, the White House question, it remains in a cover-up mode, but some people actually raise this issue. Mm-hmm. Now, otherwise, I think it's significant that Brad Sherman, who's a California Democrat, actually raised the actual situation in Libya and pointed out that the Libyan government doesn't see the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group as the enemy. Now, this is, you know, I can't remember anybody in the Congress who's even mentioned the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group until we raised this. He then says that the government of Libya, it doesn't wage war on Ansar al-Sharia. Right? So he's basically raising the fact that the government is a coalition which includes, or at least countenances, he said, evil jihadists, and he warned that the rebels in Syria include elements just as bad as those who attacked us in Benghazi. Now, this is coming from a Democrat. And I think, you know, look at the fact that Charles Rangel came to the Walter Jones press conference, and then you have Brad Sherman, who's, you know, I wouldn't necessarily expect that he would be making these kinds of comments.
Well, Sherman, actually, I don't know if you remember this, Will, but at the time of the bailout, back in September, October 2008, Sherman was the congressman who came out and said that we're being told if the bailout doesn't take place, there may be martial law declared. And he caught a lot of flack for that. So I think there's a somewhat independent streak with him. But I think what's important, you mentioned the Walter Jones-Rangel press conference. What we're beginning to see is that the protection that Obama has been given by the Democratic Party up to this point, and certainly by the media, it may be starting to crack a little bit.
Well, you know, it's It's interesting because if you go at this thing, one of the problems with the Republicans thus far is they will say, well, we have to get to the bottom of Benghazi, which they correctly, you know, put the blame for on Obama. But at the same time, you know, you saw this with Romney. Well, we have to work closely with Saudi Arabia. And then you have McCain basically having supported the overthrow of Gaddafi and thinking we should do more to support the opposition in Syria, even though they're Al-Qaeda. So when you go after it in this way, that in fact you got to oust Obama to stop World War III, and that the means for doing that is that it's not just that he didn't provide security in the embassy,
right.
It's that he's allied with Al-Qaeda, which is a terrorist organization, in his efforts to implement Tony Blair's limited sovereignty doctrine and regime change policy.
Well,
and so,
right,
so Democrats, you know, basically, it's going to this forces Republicans to give up some of their ideological garbage and to really think this thing through and go after Obama, not just on whether Susan Rice lied. I mean, it wasn't just for electoral purposes that she lied. She lied because they were covering up an entire policy of support of Al-Qaeda. And remember, it was Susan Rice back in 1996 who was responsible for the U.S. rejecting the offer by Sudan to hand over Osama bin Laden. Who knows whether it would have even been a September 11, 2001 if it weren't for Susan Rice. But, you know, the point here is then you take the Democrats' side. Well, they're all defending Obama and so forth, you know, that you see this all the time. I mean, they just say, oh, the Republicans are being partisan. Oh, the Republicans cut the funding for security of the embassy. But when you deal with it from the standpoint of Obama is allied with Al-Qaeda and he's going for World War III, then you're basically, you know, addressing on a level which some Democrats are going to actually respond to. Particularly when the same guy that they just backed for president is cutting Medicare and Social Security and everything
else. I think the real issue on Susan Rice takes you into this broader question, because not only was she involved in the cover-up for Benghazi, was she involved in the protection of bin Laden because of her hatred of Sudan, but she also was very much at the center of protecting a genocide against the people of the Congo. She was at the center of protecting the Rwanda government of Kagame and the Ugandan government of Museveni, who are responsible for at least 6 million deaths in the Congo. And this is where you begin to get at the British policy of population reduction through destroying sovereign nation states. So I think the question now that has to come up is this responsibility to protect doctrine, which goes back to Tony Blair and his 1999 speech in Chicago calling for an end of the era of Westphalia.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, this is the policy that we're, you know, Helga LaRouche just organized a conference in Germany, as you know, and it was basically in terms of rejecting the shift which the British, led by Blair, have engineered away from the principles of national sovereignty, the principle of national sovereignty upon which the Treaty of Westphalia ended, you know, basically an immediate 30 years war, which was religious warfare, and in Europe. So the basic idea is that you don't have to respect national sovereignty. You can intervene so-called to protect the population. You have a responsibility to protect. And of course, this is exactly what we used in overthrowing Gaddafi in the first place. And you have to realize, and certainly the Russians and others have pointed this out, which is that the UN Charter is based on the principle of national sovereignty.
Right.
International law is based upon that principle.
It was reestablished at Nuremberg after the Nazis in World War II.
And our Constitution is based on this because the idea here is that the only conditions under which a president could take military action immediately is if there's actual attack on U.S. or imminent danger. And, of course, Gaddafi didn't represent a danger to the United States. Assad doesn't represent a danger to the United States. Saddam Hussein didn't. These are all wars, and at least, you know, I mean, and of course, Obama does not recognize the constitutional requirement to go to the Congress to get consent for war.
And this, Will, is the subject of this press conference yesterday with Walter Jones and Charlie Rangel. Obviously, an assertion that of the congressional mandate from the Constitution that the president cannot take offensive military action without going to the Congress. And we've seen this HCR 107 of Walter Jones, which should be endorsed by 435 members of the House of Representatives. I think it's still only 8 or 10 congressmen. Do you expect, as this environment deepens, because this is not going to end, this is going to, I'm sure, take on a much more aggressive life, especially given the courage of Jones and Rangel and given the work that you've done on this. This is where our listeners have a responsibility. We've got to get the rest of the Congress to sign on to this resolution to assert the fact that the president cannot arbitrarily declare war as though he were a monarch.
Well, exactly. And I think, frankly, I think that one thing that can be done is print this fact sheet out and get it to your local, you know, your congressman. Get it to their congressional office. Demand that there be in the House, there's a resolution calling for a select committee to investigate Benghazi. It had, as of a few days ago, it had 27 co-sponsors. There's one in the Senate, which only has two co-sponsors. It was introduced by McCain. But I think that the combination of what Walter Jones has done with this resolution and this material in terms of Obama aligned with Al Qaeda, placed in the context that this policy, is leading us to World War III, and we're on the edge, and that'll be thermonuclear. This can create the dynamic of a real shift, because I think there were people in this committee in the House. Forget the Senate. I mean, you know, Kerry basically took care of the Senate hearing. After all, he's in line to become Secretary of State, and he's the one who approved, basically gave cover to Obama for going to war in Libya in the first place without having to come to Congress.
In an alliance with John McCain.
Yeah, right. That's the irony, huh? But the House was better, and there were people who were raising policy issues. For instance, this guy, Representative Royce, is going to be the incoming chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, essentially said that you have to look at the policy decisions, which created the environment for the attack on Benghazi. And he raised the fact that it's a policy of choice. We armed Libyan rebels, and now those weapons are going to Syria. So we've got a situation where everybody recognizes the Accountability Review Board was just, you know, that's a, it's like an internal, administrative cover-up within one agency. They didn't even talk to the president. The White House has not even mentioned the report. And that's where the policies are formed.
And I think didn't they get three or four people to resign in the State Department as sort of sacrificial lambs?
Yeah, it's probably the case that they merited the criticism and should have resigned. But that's not, they didn't form the policy. They operated within a policy geometry. Which is Obama and Obama's policy as defined by Blair and the British Saudi Empire. So the point here is, I think we've got a shot we're not really even at a breakout point yet, but we're at a point where if we get a full mobilization, we could force an actual investigation of this, which is going to get Obama out, because frankly, aligning with Al Qaeda, that's already an impeachable offense. And he already went to war in Libya without congressional authority.
And we're getting, I just got a report tonight from, or last night from Keisha Rogers, who had a meeting outside of her district, but close to her district, and she said there were a number of veterans who were there. And the response we're starting to get, Pat Lang, who's a veteran in intelligence and military, was at the press conference with Walter Jones and Charlie Rangel. Charlie Rangel himself is a Korean War veteran. We're beginning to get responses now from people who have put their lives on the line for the country, who are asking the question, how can we justify the deaths in Afghanistan and the deaths in Iraq, where we were supposedly fighting al-Qaeda, when the president has us in an alliance with al-Qaeda?
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think the point is that what Mr. LaRouche has been emphasizing is that this is something that could take on enough steam to interfere with the inauguration, that there could be an impeachment investigation started right now. In fact, there should be. And so the urgency is there. Now, Will, I want to get to the other side of this urgency question. You're listening to Will Wirtz, who has written this bombshell of a fact sheet, which is available and is being circulated. It's an updated fact sheet on the alliance between U.S. President Obama and al-Qaeda. Now, Will, and yesterday there was a press conference held by President Putin. There's been an effort in the media to say the Russians are ready to give up on Assad, pull out their people, make some kind of an agreement. But in fact, the Russian military has said repeatedly, and President Putin has reiterated this just in the last days, that the Russians see this idea of regime change in Syria as a threat to themselves. When it's combined with the deployment of the ABM systems, the Patriot missiles now in Turkey, and so on. At this point, I don't know whether the Congress is aware of this, but I'm sure there are some people, because the U.S. military is aware of it. This is the other side of it, the nuclear war danger, that I think goes hand in hand with the fact that the president, in an alliance with al-Qaeda, is risking triggering a thermonuclear war.
Yeah, actually, at the press conference that was given by Walter Jones and Charlie Rangel, Pat Lang, and Tony Schaefer, and also EIR's Jeff Steinberg, the first question was, since Syria has alliances with Russia and Iran, aren't we risking a wider war? And, of course, recently the chief of staff of the Iranian army made a statement to the effect that forces in the West are actually creating the danger of world war. The Russians are also concerned because, in fact, a lot of these, many of these al-Qaeda fighters, including in Syria, are from Chechnya.
Right.
So they're threatened if this kind of policy of regime change is to go forward, and if these kinds of al-Qaeda forces are being backed by the United States and Britain, they can see that the entire Caucasus surrounding their southern flank could blow up in flames. So this is, that's one of the things that they're actually looking at, and they know. I mean, Lyndon LaRouche has emphasized that this thing from the beginning, the overthrow of Gaddafi and then the move into Syria, this ultimately is aimed at Russia and China. And this kind of policy confrontation pushed by the British, and their stooge Obama, threatens world war. And there's only one kind of world war at this date with the weapons that we have, which is thermonuclear. So,
well, we also saw some opposition, although it was limited, in Germany about the deployment of the German units with the Patriot missiles. But as far as Europe is concerned, at this point, they're completely under the control of NATO on the one side and the European Union on the other. So it really does come down that war avoidance is the responsibility now of the American people. The American people to push the Congress to act to defend our national interests, and certainly avoiding thermonuclear war is part of our national interest.
I'd say so. There's one interesting thing which has developed. We'll have to see how much significance it has. But the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee has reared its head and is putting pressure on Hague to consult with the House of Commons, and is raising the question of whether war against Syria is even legal. Now, of course, as you remember, there was opposition to Tony Blair's policy at the time of the first Iraq war, when he lied that there were weapons of mass destruction. You know, that opposition included a weapons expert by the name of David Kelly, who was found killed. And, you know, there's certainly evidence to suggest that it was not a suicide, but he was actually murdered because he was opposing the Blair policy. Even at that time, Lena LaRouche had been on BBC a number of times going after this policy.
Right.
But, you know, since then, although there have been sort of rear guard, you know, protests against Blair, including the Chillicott inquiry, which really didn't go anywhere, this is the first indication that there might be some opposition developing there. But again, the key thing is that in terms of thermonuclear war, the United States is the exceptional element. I mean, in terms of our capacity. So if you want to stop thermonuclear war, you've got to stop. You've got to oust Obama from office. There's just no way around it. As long as he's in there, this danger exists.
And Will, I think the key role of Blair is very important, because Blair is not in the government right now. He hasn't been for the last few years. And yet Blair is at the center, whether it's the sabotage of Palestinian-Israeli talks, whether it's the calls for overthrowing Assad, his role in Libya, and so on. And Blair, as Lyndon LaRouche has emphasized, is a representative of something more than the British government, which is the British Empire. I think this is the other factor that we have to fight out with the American people, that there still is a British Empire. It's not the people of England, but it's the interrelated banking and financial networks with this military operation, which included the British control through the Saudis of 9/11.
Well, and as Lena LaRouche has emphasized, the world is on a hair trigger, both in respect to two questions. One is the question of thermonuclear war. The other is in respect to the whole financial system, where they're attempting to maintain it through hyperinflation, which is just going to blow out the system. And you know, the danger of thermonuclear war is very related to the financial collapse process that we're seeing before us. So, you know, and all of that really is centered on Britain. And the thing about Obama is this guy, you know, it seems like one of his greatest aspirations in life is to sleep in at Buckingham Palace and propitiate the Queen of England, who wants to kill about 6 billion people on the face of the earth. So, you know, this is you know, we've got a president who is basically carrying out a British policy, you know, as reflected also in his green policy. It's a genocidal policy. And, you know, it's just well known. This is a guy who gets pleasure out of killing. Every Tuesday he has a kill meeting to determine who is going to be killed by drones.
Well, I think this is one of the ironies of why people can't take Obama seriously when he goes up to Connecticut and cries over the children who were murdered there. And yet, according to the UN report, there are over 170-something children killed in Pakistan by his drone policy. And this is something that he has no intention of stopping.
No. And, you know, and it's, so this is the thing about, and American people really have to put the screws on their congressmen, because those congressmen right now have a responsibility to take action, and they're not known for being courageous. So, or all that principled. But I think we have the goods on them. And it's up to us to really do everything we can at this juncture, because we are on a hair trigger. This is close. And with Obama's reelection, unless this guy is stopped, he's just going to go forward and act as if he doesn't have any opposition.
You had, besides the fact sheet, which, as I've pointed out several times and I'll point out again, is available on LaRouchePack.com, you did an interview that's up on the site. Is that readily accessible?
Yeah, I don't think it's because it was done about a week ago. It's not on the home page, but you can gain access to it. Although what I developed a lot of the intelligence that I presented in the fact sheet after that video was done. For instance, I did not have the material on the February 17th Brigade. I did not have the material which I now have on Tripoli Military Council deputy head actually going with 600 Al-Qaeda operatives in November 2011 to Syria.
So the fact sheet then is the most up-to-date material.
Fact sheet is most up-to-date. It's more up-to-date even than the 34-minute video, which is on the site. It's like... It's just so pervasive. For instance, one of the things that's in the fact sheet is that the brother of the leading Al-Qaeda operative who was Libyan, who was killed by a U.S. drone in June 2012 in Pakistan, and which may have also been a further contributing factor to the Benghazi attack on September 11th. But this guy is... in the interior minister of Libya, in charge of borders, which means that Al-Qaeda's control is basically in control of the borders of Libya, which allows them to smuggle Al-Qaeda personnel and weapons into the country and out of the country to either Mali or Syria. So when you look at this thing, there's just no denying that Obama has carried out a policy which is against the national interests of this country and actually of the world. And what Putin pointed out, people were in this interview you mentioned, is that people say, aren't you mistaken by continuing to support Syria? Look, nobody else supports them. You're a minority. And he says, well, we're not supporting the regime per se. We're supporting national sovereignty and that the Syrian people should make the decision, as to what their government should be. But the idea of regime change and that somebody can this can be accomplished through military victory means endless warfare. And if you want to talk about a mistake, how about the consequences of supporting the overthrow of Gaddafi? How about the fact that you have a dead ambassador and three other dead Americans? So isn't that a mistake? So I think it was very powerful. It's ironic that it's the Russians and the Chinese, among others, who are defending a principle of national sovereignty, and the United States, which is carrying out the British policy of so-called limited sovereignty in violation of international law. And this is being done by a president who claims that he was a teacher of constitutional law.
Well, and this is a good reason for making sure that Susan Rice did not become Secretary of State, although I think that may have been somewhat of a bogus issue, but that her work with Samantha Power and Obama on this responsibility to protect, which, by the way, is also supported by John Kerry.
Sure.
So, this is the regime policy of the British faction controlling the United States right now. And as you pointed out, it does go against our constitutional tradition. As expressed very importantly by George Washington, I think in his farewell address, where he said we should not be engaged in this kind of policy around the world. So we see.
Well, it's not even tradition; it's the principle of the Declaration of Independence in terms of principle of self-government based on the consent of the governed, which actually goes back to Nicholas of Cusa.
And where these laws come from, which is something higher than Barack Obama or the British Queen.
Exactly.
Well, Will, we've run out of time. I want to again call the attention of our listeners to the updated fact sheet on the Obama alliance with Al-Qaeda, which is in the most central box on the LaRouche Pack website, LaRouchePack.com, LaRouchePack.com. This should be in the hands of every single one of our listeners. You should reproduce it, email it out, get this around, but most importantly, get to your congressman, and don't wait until January 20th or something like that. If you can't find your congressman over this weekend, Monday, I don't care if it's Christmas Eve, Monday your congressman should hear from you. It's that important. So, Will, thanks very much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you, Harley.
Okay, and we'll be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern for the next edition, in fact, the last edition of the LaRouche Show for the year 2012, and I hope it will be a memorable program. And I hope we're still here by then. We made it through the Mayan calendar apocalypse, so I'm sure that if we do our job, we'll still be around. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.